Mr. Gilmore, Real 4. We're talking about when you were at Seacroft Hospital, Leeds, from June 1940. And you say you had a tetanus injection, but how did they actually treat your wound? I mean, did they actually operate on it to do something with it?
After we all got this tetanus injection, basically because of the conditions that we had been in. And then the medical officer came round and inspected everybody. And I was x-rayed and then taken down to the operating theatre where they removed a piece of shrapnel, which I still have here.
Were you knocked out for that, or did they do it while you were awake?
Oh no, I was taken down to the theatre, given a jab, and taken down to the theatre and knocked myself together. And when they did the removal, they damaged the artery and they damaged both the nerves, because when I wakened up, the left arm was lying across here, and the only thing I could move was just a slight feathering movement of the fingers. And that went on for roughly 7 days when the masseur, now in those days we had no physiotherapists, they were masseurs, and the masseur came along with the galvanic batteries and put the batteries on and stimulated movement. And he said to me quite candidly, if they'd waited another 7 days, I'd have lost the use of the arm altogether. And the wound healed, and it's still perfectly obvious if I'm stripped down, because the wound is scarified, because they had to remove some flesh and to get it to join together again.
So the electrical massage treatment worked?
It restored it restored movement. I was category D for quite a long time.
It's all right. How long were you in the hospital?
I went into the hospital in June, and I think I came out in September. I'm quite certain it was September, because I remember going to Dundee Royal Infirmary for treatment for the arm in September.
Now, that's where you met your wife. What was general life like in the hospital? What was recreations like? I mean, were you allowed out?
There was no such thing as recreation. We were allowed out in hospital blues. And this was to begin with. I think they tightened things up before I left the hospital, because some of the boys getting down to Leeds and getting out and getting into Melbourne Arms were coming back under the influence. And I think we put a stop to it eventually, so that we could only get out and leave on a pass. When I came out of hospital, I still had to go to Dundee Royal Infirmary.
Were you sent home then?
I was sent home.
Convalescent leave?
Convalescent leave, yes.
And you came back to Cooper, obviously?
I came back to Cooper, yes.
And how long were you back for? September to when?
I would think I was back for about 6 or 8 weeks.
So to November?
I think somewhere about there. when I...
Were you having any other... were you still having problems with the arm?
I was still getting treatment for the arm. Galvanic battery, and that was mostly what it was. Because there was very little else they could do. Once they got the arm fully restored to movement, that was it. And when I left there, I went back to Catterick, and I was Category D. And as the RSM said there, there was very little they could do with me. And I was sent down to the Chertsey, to an hospital in Chertsey, where I was on the guard duty at the entrance.
So just guarding?
Just checking people in and out of the hospital. We had a visitor's book, and we also checked in ambulances, and we did a tour of the wards to make sure that the patients were behaving themselves. It was, it had been in the past an asylum for people who were mentally disabled, and there was only one occasion when we had any difficulty. And that was a private who had come back under the influence of drink, and he was placing a person aboard, and they sent for us, and I went up to the ward, and as I said to the medical officer, all I want you to do is to certify him as being capable of being moved, and eventually I did persuade him, and then it was a case of saying, fall in two men and march him across to another building where there was an isolation ward, and he was given a blanket and put in there, and I looked in, say, every three quarters of an hour to an hour just to make sure he was all right. And then he was we phoned his regiment in the morning, and his RSM came down with a vehicle and collected him. And I regret to say that I don't have a great deal of sympathy for him, because his RSM felt the regiment had been the good name of the regiment had been spoiled.
Now, we're not quite sure of the dates of this period, but you seem to have rejoined your regiment round about February 1941. Would that be right?
I think that is.
And where were they?
They were at Wellingborough.
And what did you rejoin as? You had been a sergeant in charge of a carrier troop. Now, they've got...
No, I was a corporal in...
Sorry, a corporal in charge of a carrier troop. Now, yeah. What were you rejoining as?
As a corporal, and then in February 41, I was promoted, acting paid, Lance Sergeant.
And which squadron were you in?
E Squadron.
And what was your job as Lance Sergeant?
Mostly on driving. A driving instructor. And that was in February, and in July I was promoted Sergeant.
Now, what do you remember of your duties as driving instructor? It won't be in there, what you did. Okay.
I was doing instruction on five tunners, Bedford five tunners, which were the gate crash gearbox. And you had the the crew were in the back of the lorry, still 7 or 8 people, and I was the co-driver, and I used to bring them forward and give them instruction how to change the gear and steering and all the rest of it. Mind you, it was hair raising.
In what way?
Well, the tendency is, if you're a learner and you change gear, and the gear left hand goes forward that way, it's automatically the right hand comes back. And if you put the gear forward that way, you go like that. So you have to watch carefully because you tend to zigzag. But it was good fun. It was good fun. I think it was 3 months I spent at in Newcastle.
When was that?
After I attended care maintenance of ammunition course and training, that was at Bingley, no, RAOC. I got a Q1 on that. Attended brigade, the Army and Med Instructors course, 11/42 until January 1941. Waterproofing course, AX, wireless course, 4 weeks. Result above average, that was in December 1944.
Now, what were all these? So, what were you doing then with the regiment?
Instructional work.
All the time?
Yes.
Anything you remember about that? Any of the postings or things in England during that time?
Yes, we were in the drill hall in Wellingborough, and the sergeant major had a drill parade at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the sergeants just didn't attend it.
Why was that?
Well, we felt it was beneath our dignity.
And what happened?
It was simply a roll call. And I can remember when one of our sergeants was awarded the Long Service Medal for TA. And when he went out in charge of the morning parade, everybody was at the window going jingle, jangle, jingle, jangle. It was rather ridiculous, but the sort of thing that used to happen.
What happened? Did nothing happen about you not attending the drill parade in the morning?
Yes. The sergeant major had us in front of the major, Major Hutchison, who read us Riot Act, and one of our number, Sergeant Nicholson, said, "Well, excuse me, sir, but could I explain?" And his explanation was to the effect that the 6 o'clock parade, and probably the sergeants were in the worst shape at that time, and he felt it was be a rotten example for the troops if we went on parade unshaven. And we marched out, and we weren't, what, 5 pieces. Momentarily, when the door flung open, and there was Sandy Hutchison saying, "You blank Nicholson, you have done it again." It was true.
And any other stories of your time at Wellingborough?
At Wellingborough, I was taking a parade from one section of the ground to another. when a staff car approached flying a flag. And as the car approached, I gave the eyes right and saluted. And when it passed, I was horrified to find there was nobody in it. So I took proper steps and supported it, because a staff car can only fly the flag on the radiator if there is a passenger. And I reported it to the Sergeant Major, who took it up, because it was rather ridiculous to people on the pavement to see a squad of men giving the eyes right and a sergeant giving a salute to an empty car. I think that's... And that was... I got involved. I played a game of rugby there, and I was told by the medical officer if there was any problem to report back to him immediately. We were playing a school team, and in one of the scrummages I got my ear ripped down here, so that, as usual, I mean, it bled, but we just put a bandage around my head like that, and there was no problem, stopped bleeding, so that was all right. So after I'd had a meal, being in charge of transport myself, I simply got the Austin utility and went up to the officer's mess and asked to see the medical officer, who was not amused, because as he said, if they'd had any sense, the matron at the hospital who dealt with it should have sent me immediately, and then he could have put stitches in it. But because there was no possibility of stitching it, too long a time had elapsed, I had to go up regularly and get it packed with sulfanilamide. But I think that was the only time that wasn't entered my medical history.
Now, were you actually a transport sergeant at this time with A Squadron, or were you with Headquarters Squadron?
I was with A Squadron, and I was doing instruction work with the squadron.
But you weren't actually a transport sergeant?
No.
You were just with Headquarters Troop of A Squadron?
I was with, I'm not quite sure, because...
Doesn't matter too much. What, anything else before you leave Wellingborough? Because they went up to Norfolk, didn't they?
They went to a station near King's Lynn. And we were also at Thetford, because these photographs that I showed you, the copies of them, were taken at Thetford.
What do you remember of your time there? Or was it just routine?
I think it was just routine.
So just training, driving, that sort of thing, courses?
Yeah.
What's the next thing you remember then?
And then we moved from there, from Thetford. I'm quite certain we moved down to the south of England. I forget where it was.
Doesn't matter too much if you.
I forget where we were exactly. And then, because I remember taking a convoy south of London, and we went through London in the early hours of the morning, and I was unfortunate to this extent that I had a second lieutenant as my co-driver, and was horrified to find out that he couldn't drive. So So I had to drive somewhere about 480 miles on my own. Fair enough, we stopped every 2 hours for 10 minutes. But by the time I got to Rothbury, it was dark. I wouldn't say my eyes were terribly good in the driving in half-depth lights. And then we were stationed at Rothbury for quite a while. In point of fact, I think I've still got postcards of Rothbury somewhere.
Now, how was your arm during all this time? Were you having any after effects?
No, after effects altogether.
So what's the next thing you remember? So all through this period you were going on these courses. Anything you particularly remember of these things?
Not really.
What's the next thing you do remember then?
I remember, the one that I do remember was the attending the waterproofing course at the NCVMS.
What do you remember of that?
As a result of the VX. Yes, they had a river where there was a dam, and they built ramps on either side of the water, and after we'd done the waterproofing, now the waterproofing included the removal of the fan belt, and then you had to encase the ignition system in waterproofing material. There were two vehicles that we were involved with. One was a five-tonner, I think it was a Ford, and the other was an Austin Utility. And in the Austin Utility, they put a sandbag on the seat, because when you drove into the water, it came up to your chest, and you came out the other side. The people who were doing the first part, we did that was the first part. The other people were doing the second part, and they were using the five-tonner. And when they saw us coming out of the water rather wet, they laughed like a drain. But then they didn't realise that they were going to be put through the same forum was to drive both vehicles through the waterproofing them. It was amusing. Care and maintenance ammunition was very, very interesting, because we came across, I was shown in a clump of trees where shells from the 1914-18 war were kept, and they were gas shells. And you know, if the shell meets the case, the ones that we looked at there, we weren't allowed to touch because there was an exudation round the rim where they were meeting, and any friction on that would have been sufficient to cause it to explode. That's why they were kept there, and they were just going to, they had to be kept there until they actually disintegrated. Probably after the war they were blown up.
So these were the courses you were on that you mentioned. Anything else? What about the regiment? They've been re-equipped with various tanks. First the ending up with a Covenanter, and then various tanks. Well, you weren't involved in them.
I wasn't involved with tanks at all. I was, I was mostly employed in the driving and maintenance, and teaching people basic, well, a driver who passed his driving test with an extra threepence a day. And what you had to watch was I remember being on one convoy and John R. coming up and telling me a vehicle had broken down. So I stopped the convoy and went back with my Austin utility and was horrified because sitting at the side of the road with these spanners, this trooper, believe it or not, had already taken off one of the red nuts. And the red nuts are those that held the plate in place. And if he'd taken off them, the plate would have blown and he'd taken his head off. And of course, I had no alternative but to say, you're for it in the morning. Because he, driving and maintenance, had made sure that he was told, you don't take off red nuts because they held the plate.
The plate of what? Can you just explain a bit better for
them? Well, it was a disc that was in the centre of the wheel. And it held the rims on because the outside rim was held in place by this plate with these red nuts on it. And there was 70 pound pressure in the tyre. So you can imagine what would happen. It would have been disastrous. I don't think there's anything else I can add.
Any other moves or anything else? Before you, because you leave them in 44, don't you? You didn't go to France with them.
I didn't, no.
Anything else before that?
I don't think so.
How did you come to leave the regiment then? What was the date you left? I think that's in there, isn't it? You tell me what happened. It doesn't matter. Tell us what happened.
Well, I had an interview with the squadron leader who told me that the regiment had too many sergeants. And at that time, now that was 40. Yes, because I was over 30 at that time, and the ruling had come out in the Armoured Corps that 30 was too old for the Armoured Corps. They wanted people between 25 up to including 30, but I was over 30 at that time. And I went up to the depot.
And you don't remember when that was? Before the unit went to France, though?
Oh, yes.
And was it in 1944?
It was 1944.
And so what did you do when you went up to... That'd be Catterick Depot.
I was up to Catterick Depot. Where I did nothing. I just went on. There was a friend of mine, the pair of us, we were billeted in a room, a tent, a mission hut, where there was a corporal in charge of the mission hut, and we were put in with a lot of recruits. It was most embarrassing because when the sergeant major came round to inspect the billets, as he did under beds, the first morning he came round, we weren't there because we used to disappear. And he remarked to the corporal who was in charge of it, "Whose are these two beds?" And he said, mentioned that the both of our names, you see? And the sergeant major said, "You've got two sergeants." And he said, "As soon as I came into this billet," he said, "I saw these two beds. And I knew right away that but they weren't recruits when they were supposed to be. He said, how do you get on with them? He said, well, I'm in my bed when they come in at night. And he said, I sometimes see them when they go to get the treatments in the morning to get washed and shaved, but otherwise I don't see them at all.